Election College, episode 208, John C. Breckinridge, part one.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Hey Ben, here we are talking about vice presidents. Well, up until the late 1850s, early 1860s, and then we're going to do something else, because whenever you get to Lincoln, you just got to start over, right? Anyway, it's another vice president from Kentucky. And guess what? I didn't learn a lot about this guy. I learned nothing about this guy in Kentucky history class. So if you're from Kentucky, listen up, because this guy played a pretty big role in your history. And if you're from anywhere else, he played a big role in your history too. So, so much that it's becoming less of, well, we're just going to talk about the vice presidency. We're going to talk about the life of John C. Breckinridge, and it's going to take two episodes because this guy did a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's a little amazing because of his giant repertoire of stuff he did. Like you've said a couple times, just that, I mean, I think I know of a couple places named after Breckinridge, and not even 100% sure it's the same Breckinridge, but in all reality, I don't know anything. Well, I didn't know anything at all about John Breckinridge before we got started with the podcast, and specifically this episode, maybe one or two others that, you know, kind of had a cursory glance at him. So, yeah, I'm happy to talk about a guy that most people don't know anything about. I think that's cool that there are still people out there that we can discover things about.
Yeah, people are going to slap us. The listeners are going to slap us because usually we pride ourselves on just getting into it. But
no.
I don't know.
I don't pride myself on that. Maybe I actually not. Feel really bad about it.
Okay, well, forget about it. This is just going to be the longest introduction in Election College history.
I'm actually just going to keep talking just so it's longer now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So way back in January of 1821, a boy was born in the Breckinridge household to Joseph Cabell Breckinridge and Mary Clay Smith Breckinridge. He's their only boy. And Mary was the daughter of Samuel Stanhope Smith, who founded Hampton-Sidney College in 1775, and she was also the granddaughter of John Witherspoon, who signed the Declaration of Independence. Now, his dad served as Speaker of the Kentucky House of Representatives and was appointed as Kentucky Secretary of State right before young John was born. In the midst of all of this, Kentucky was becoming a state, right? So if you're from Kentucky, what you need to know about Breckinridge's dad, Breckinridge, was that if you've heard of the county, the Kentucky County, Breckinridge County, it's actually named after his dad. And he was extremely influential in the life of Thomas Jefferson because he introduced the Kentucky resolutions. So John Breckinridge, pretty important guy. He was a senator and so on. So what you need to know is John C. Breckinridge, he was born to a very prominent political family.
Yeah, and right after he's born, like the next month, the family moves, and they move down to be with Governor John Adair. He's going to be the governor, and they're moving to Frankfort. Jason, is that the same governor's mansion that's still there?
I don't think so.
No.
It's well, not. It would have not been. It's would, still there.
Okay. Well, it would have been way more exciting, this lead up to this. But we visited the Frankfort capital, the Kentucky capital in Frankfort this summer. Wait, when was that? That was a while ago. I don't know. And it was pretty great. But anyway.
Oh, get this, Ben. The old governor's mansion where they lived, it's the oldest official executive residence still officially used in the U.S.
Wow. Well, look
at
that.
The lieutenant governor lives there.
Nice.
That was free, ladies and gentlemen. Free information on Election College.
In August of 1823, there is a fever that's kind of going around, and they called it the prevailing fever. Really descriptive, I know. and this fever makes its way into Frankfurt, and Mr. Breckinridge takes his kids and goes up to Lexington and puts them off on Grandma. And whenever he goes back, he and his wife, John Breckinridge's mother, both get really sick. And he ends up dying, and she survives. Now, the unfortunate thing is he had quite a bit of debt. And what he had, you know, his assets weren't enough to pay off those debts. So Mom goes back up to Lexington and hangs out, and Grandma supports them all and takes care of the family for a while.
Yeah, and Grandma is really big into telling young John all about how Grandpa did all these awesome things and, well, is part of the reason the United States is the United States and all that kind of stuff. Like a lot of wives and their mothers-in-law, Breckinridge's mom and grandmother, they had a fight. And so Mom, his sister Letitia, and him, they moved to Danville, Kentucky. And they live with his sister Frances and her husband. Her husband was the president of Center College. And interestingly enough, Breckinridge's uncle, William, was on the faculty there. So he's like, well, yeah, Center, that's a good school. I'm going to go there. So he earns a Bachelor of Arts degree in 1838. He heads up to what is now known as Princeton University, hangs out there for a little while, literally just a little while. He comes back to Kentucky in 1839, reads law with Judge William Ousley, and in 1840, he goes to law school at Transylvania University there in Lexington, and he gets a Bachelor of Laws degree, and he starts practicing law, just like any other future vice president would do.
So he stays there in Lexington while he's deciding where he wants to build his practice and kind of hone his skills and continue to go into business. And he's able to borrow books from John Crittenden's library. So it's obviously way better than having to buy all those books, even though he's used to kind of a cushy life that he no longer has because the money's gone. And Lexington at that time is like full of attorneys and lawyers. So he decides, well, I'll go back to Frankfurt, where my family lived for a while. He goes back to Frankfurt, and it's so packed that he can't find an office. So he and a former classmate end up heading out to the Iowa Territory to look for better opportunities. And, you know, go west, young man. Anytime something's not going right out here, just go west, young man. That's what he does.
Yeah. So in Illinois, he's like, hey, Illinois, this is a nice place. Well, guess what? Other lawyers thought it was a nice place too, namely Stephen Douglas and Abraham Lincoln. So they're like, oh, well, let's go to Iowa. That sounds great. So they go to Iowa, to Burlington, Iowa, that is. And he sets up shop and he becomes a Democrat, which is pretty interesting because a lot of the Kentucky Breckinridges were Whigs. So while he's in Iowa, he identifies with the Democratic Party, and he becomes a member of the Democratic Committee of Des Moines County. Now, all of this sounds well and good, right? He becomes a Democrat. Well, the Kentucky Breckinridges, they were Whigs, and they find out that young Johnny has become a Democrat. William Breckinridge, who's his uncle, says, quote, I felt as I would have done if I had heard that my daughter had been dishonored. So pretty big deal. And this is going to come up a little bit later. He goes back to Kentucky in May of 1843. And he's trying to get his mom to get along with the extended family. And he gets the flu. And he's like, you know what? I got the flu. I'm not feeling too great. I'm going to stay here in Kentucky. And he meets Thomas Bullock's cousin. And Bullock is the one that he went to Iowa with. Her name was Mary Birch. He's like, hey, you, I like you. let's get engaged. So in October of that year, he goes back to Iowa, closes up shop, comes back to Kentucky. And in December of 1843, they get married and settle in Georgetown.
Yeah, so after he has a few kids, and they ended up having 6 kids all in all. But after they have a few kids, he is really confident in his ability to be a lawyer. He decides, maybe I'll give Lexington another shot. I know that it was busy before, but who knows now. And so they move back there. He ends up having a partnership with James Beck, who becomes a senator in the future, but we won't get into that quite yet. The Mexican-American War is here, and Breckinridge is a huge supporter of the war. He actually asked to be appointed, and they are like, well, what do you want to do? And he goes, well, I'd like to be something cool. Like, I want to be on the staff of a major general. How's that? And they're like, yeah, that's fine, but we can't pay you. And also, we would advise you not to do that, because we can't pay you, and we just don't think it's a good idea. So he doesn't do that. He goes on and delivers a few different speeches, and while he's giving one particular speech, Henry Clay comes out, and his son had passed away in the Battle of the Buena Vista, which is where Breckinridge was giving one of those speeches, and it actually moved him to tears, the speech that was being given.
So after Clay is brought to tears after this speech, Breckinridge applies again for a military commission. So the powers that be in Kentucky were like, hey, we need some diversity for military commission, right? Because we're all Whigs. And so with the encouragement of John Crittenden and Governor William Owsley, they say, sure, let's bring on the Democrat. So after the speech, Breckinridge draws a lot of attention, good attention this time, and applies again for a military commission, and he gets it. And he serves in the 3rd Kentucky Infantry as a major. They leave Kentucky on November 1st of 1847. They go to Veracruz. They're there in November. And I love this. I don't. I mean, we're kind of picking on illnesses, Ben.
Yeah.
But the yellow fever broke out. But you know what they called it?
What's that?
Lavomito.
That makes sense.
I mean, I'm sure I'm butchering the name, but when I see that, I just see vomito.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I may not ever refer to that as the same as I have up until this point again. So the regiment, they go to Mexico City, and reports are that Breckinridge, he's pretty much a hero because he is really sick with yellow fever. He walks all the way because other soldiers were not feeling very well either, and he allowed them to use his horse. And when they get to Mexico City, the fighting's almost over, so he doesn't perform any combat service, but he's considered a brave guy.
So Breckinridge soon realizes that his legal expertise is much more of a calling than his military training, and it's more in demand as well. So he goes, and he's actually in a court case against Winfield Scott, where they're trying to kind of derail Winfield Scott from having any presidential ambitions and stuff like that. It becomes a little bit of a convoluted situation, and well, Breckinridge didn't quite know all the details going into it. He was able to question a few witnesses and everything like that, but Pillow, the guy he went to be assistant counsel for, really did most of the talking. He goes back to Louisville on July 16th of 1848, and they go to Mexico. While they're there, about 100 members of the 1,000-man regiment died of illness, and his group didn't see any combat, but just having that military service really helped give him a boost when it came to political prospects later on back home in Kentucky.
Yeah, so just backing up just a couple of years, in the 1844 election, he is all about supporting James K. Polk, and he decides for himself not to get involved in politics, especially after his law partner was like, dude, you're spending too much time in politics, just stop it. But by the time 1849 rolls around, the state of Kentucky has a constitutional convention. And interestingly enough, at the constitutional convention, his uncles are there, William and Robert, and they join with Cassius Clay to nominate abolitionists to help form the Constitution, the new updated Constitution, because Kentucky's been a state for quite some time by this point. Anyway, well, Breckinridge is on the opposing side of this issue. He is very much pro-slavery. He vies for one of Fayette County's two seats in the House of Representatives. He did own 5 slaves at this time, and interestingly enough, he was a member of the Freemason, and he was also a member of the First Presbyterian Church in Lexington, which were opposed to slavery. But go figure. He kind of aligned himself with probably what was ever politically expedient for him, I would think.
Yeah.
So Breckinridge wins, and he's now in the State House of Representatives. So it was during this time that he co-founds a newspaper called the Kentucky Statesman, which was a semi-weekly Democratic newspaper, and he visits his cousin, Mary Todd. And of course, who is Mary Todd married to? Abraham Lincoln. So they meet there in Kentucky for the first time. They are friends, even though they are quite different politically.
So if you remember, he had just gotten elected to the House of Representatives, and he gets a plurality of votes to become the Speaker. The problem is, he doesn't get enough to actually become the Speaker. He is 8 votes short of majority, and there's like nobody's budging. Nobody's going to let him actually get through this thing. So he withdraws from the race and doesn't get to be Speaker of the House at that point. He's, of course, very influential in the House of Representatives. He was on all sorts of different committees, and both standing and temporary committees as well. He's definitely in support of improving our infrastructure and our country with money from the government as well. So he's super busy and ends up actually then taking a leave of absence to go home and care for his son, John. It was about 3 days before the end of the session that year, and his son, John, had become ill and ends up passing away just a couple weeks later. So Breckinridge keeps a busy schedule. He wants to make sure that maybe that's the best way for him to cope with his grief. And he is like, you know what? I want to make sure that the things I've been working for go through. And he ends up having this proposed constitution and helping push it through to get it through for the state of Kentucky. Now, the constitution got ratified and stuff like that. People wanted to nominate him to run again, but he's like, no, you know what? I can't do it right now. I'm too upset about my son. And other people were like, well, yeah, I mean, your son, but then also money, right? So there was some controversy there.
Yeah. So Breckinridge actually goes on in his busyness and in his grief to run for the U.S. House of Representatives. And there is a lot that can be said about his run for the House, including the fact that Henry Clay, he delivered the eulogy for Henry Clay. And yeah, they were on opposite ends of the political spectrum in some cases, but in other situations they weren't so different. So he was actually seen as kind of like the heir apparent for Henry Clay on the national scale when it came to being from Kentucky. He supports the idea of popular sovereignty with issues like the Kansas-Nebraska Act. He believes that states' rights is paramount and that it should be no big deal that some states are slave and some states are free, because it's not for the federal government to meddle in the affairs of the states. Of course, these are huge issues. Breckinridge found himself very much, as you would expect, a Democrat from that era. He would follow the party line when it came to the issue of slavery. In February of 1854, districts were reapportioned, in Kentucky, which, you know, might have been some gerrymandering going on there. It did not look like Breckinridge was going to be reelected. So he took a stance of, well, if I'm not going to win, I might as well just go ahead and drop out. So he retires from the House, and in 1856, at the Democratic National Convention, which was just up the road in Cincinnati, he is very supportive of Franklin Pierce's renomination as president.
Yeah, and so Franklin Pierce doesn't get that nomination. It ends up bombing magnificently, and Breckinridge is like, well, I guess let's go behind Stephen Douglas here. And Stephen Douglas, of course, as we've talked about in the past, he still doesn't get enough votes to get the majority, and he also withdraws. So James Buchanan is the Democratic nominee, and somebody's like, well, why don't we throw Breckinridge in the mix here for vice president? I mean, that would really help balance out the ticket. That would really help people who were like all for Douglas or for Pierce. That would really help them feel a lot more settled in this decision. Somebody from Louisiana is like, okay, here you go. Here's Breckinridge for you. And he's like, no, I don't think so. I don't want it. I want to give this opportunity to other people. You know, we've got Boyd over here. He's the House Speaker. The Kentucky delegation supports him. Let him do it.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, because you've got all of these big names. You know, Millard Fillmore is one of the big names. But no, you've got Andrew Jackson Donaldson, who is pretty influential at this time. You've got John C. Fremont running, William Dayton running. And you've got this 36-year-old John C. Breckinridge on the Democratic ticket. That was a pretty big deal. And Ben, have you ever thought about that? How easily it would have been for Buchanan not to win the presidency?
Yeah.
Like, he was not like the Democrats' big all-star.
He wasn't their first pick. Face it. Yeah.
He wasn't. But somehow he becomes president, probably because Breckinridge was on the ticket, because they carry Kentucky. And the two were not necessarily very close. It's kind of interesting. I think the best way to illustrate the relationship between Buchanan and Breckinridge was Buchanan wanted Breckinridge to come over to the White House and ask for Harriet Lane. And Harriet was, I suppose Breckinridge thought that she was second rate or something like that. But it turns out she was kind of like the first lady. She was pretty important. And Buchanan, that was his customary practice to say, hey, go talk to Harriet. But actually what it meant when you went to talk to Harriet was, come talk to me. And Breckinridge was offended that Buchanan wanted him to talk to Harriet, not him. But anyway, it was a big misunderstanding. It was just not a very close relationship the two had.
So Breckinridge is the presiding officer over the Senate, and he didn't participate all the time. Sometimes he was restricted from doing so, and sometimes he just didn't want to. But he did always get the distinction of presiding gracefully and impartially. And so in 1859, when they were moving out of the old Senate chambers, he was asked to deliver the final address, which is a pretty cool honor, I think you could say. And he basically said he, you know, his biggest desire was that Congress would find a solution that would help to preserve the Union. You know, we're looking at this time of turmoil here. He really puts it out there that I think Congress needs to work together instead of just, you know, we're going to break the country apart here if we're not careful. And, you know, during the time, they're having this kind of momentous occasion where the Senate has been in this chamber for so long, and it's literally doubled in size. And, you know, he's like, hey, the Constitution had, quote, survived peace and war, prosperity and adversity. And it goes on to say, to protect the larger personal freedom compatible with public order. So he's really saying that the Constitution has been around. Let's make sure it stays around, and that hopefully somebody in the future is also going to respect the Constitution, no matter if they're in this chamber or another. We really want to make sure that the American people are being represented and that the country remains prosperous and free. And then he gets up and leads the procession over to the new chamber, and there they are. That's like the inauguration of the new chambers.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to think that they're still using those new chambers.
Yeah, it is.
To this day. There is a lot more that can be said about Breckinridge's life, and that is exactly why there's going to be a part two to this, because I mean, it seems like the vice presidency was kind of a blip on the map of Breckinridge's life. I mean, think about it. He's not even 40 years old, and he's already been the vice president. Interestingly enough, they know he's not going to become the vice president, or should I say, he's not going to be vice president after one term, because let's face it, Buchanan's kind of a disaster.
Yeah.
And he gets appointed to be the senator to replace Crittenden in Kentucky. He stepped aside, Crittenden did, and the Kentucky legislature said, "Hey, Breckinridge, come be our senator." And so he goes from being vice president of the United States, president of the Senate, to a senator. A lot more that can be said about the life of John C. Breckinridge, and we're going to just do our best to cover the last part of his life, which is absolutely outrageous.
Yeah, in the meantime, we'd love it if you'd head over to iTunes and leave us a nice little review. It doesn't have to be long. You don't have to write a book or anything there, but if you want to just like say, "Hey, these guys are doing a great job, here's 5 stars, we would really appreciate that. It means a lot to us, and we know we say that a ton, but legitimately, every time a new review comes in, we're like, "Oh, good, people are still listening. That's excellent." So head over to iTunes and leave us a review there. It's electioncollege.com/review.
Yeah, and don't forget, we love to interact with you. Yeah, you, right there, listening to us. Listen to this podcast. We love to interact with you on social media. We can be found on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Believe it or not, we check these things and we respond because we're cool like that. Anyway, you can find us at Election College on any of those platforms.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.